You ever seen a cat fart?
Seen it? No.
I didn't quite understand what happened. I just saw the thing. Oh, it opened like an iris. Like what was that?
His cat
fart. Oh, my God. Farted right in my face. Little cat. Just right open.
Apparently, it's like a little iris that just opens and then it goes right in your face.
Bill, what were you doing when this happened? Because I'm, you know what? No, I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
I was a small, impressionable child.
Oh, this wasn't recently. Okay.
No, it wasn't recently.
I know. You know, we try to explore things.
Yes,
children.
I hold my cat and like, come on, fart.
That would shock me if you did that.
Don't patronize me.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, and welcome to Listen to The Prophets. I am Paul Spataro, and as always, I am joined by my stellar crew, Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hey, so if the four of us crashed on a planet, what would our descendants look like? Oh, wait,
They wouldn't look like anything, though. Yeah.
Thankfully, if it was the four of us, there would be no descendants.
Well, what if two of us were women? Who would be the women?
Yeah, you ponder that as I move on and mention that we also have Sir Andrew Leyland.
Hello. I'm trapped in a quantum bubble as we speak.
I got a quantum bubble brewing. Oh, wait. Sorry.
And you're frightening me. And Mr. J. David Weider.
I have a quantum bubble. Who needs what?
You need a title. We have Sir Andrew Leyland. We have Dr. Bill Robinson. We need something. Squire.
Esquire. J. David Weider, Esquire.
Not Esquire. I wasn't saying Esquire. I was just saying Squire. I was leaving off the S.
Squire. It's the Squire of Weider.
The Squire of Weider.
Okay, that'll work.
He plays a harpsichord.
Unless we work Conway Twitty into this somehow.
No need to bring Conway Twitty into this.
Who, you know, that goes back some ways when we all had our musical personas. I don't remember who started that. That may have been you.
Michael Bailey.
Michael Bailey started it, which I still appreciate the fact that he assigned me Frank Sinatra. But, you know, I don't remember who everybody else was.
I was the Conway Twitty of podcasting. You're the Frank Sinatra. Bill's the Lady Gaga.
or Kesha.
Yeah, $ha.
Yeah, Lady Gaga's gotten too big. We have to bring it back a little bit to a Lady Gaga wannabe.
Why can't I be the Eddie Rabbit of podcast?
Oh, damn.
You are. you do love a rainy night.
I was going to make that joke, yeah. You are very Eddie Rabbit-like.
Who would Andy be? The British Invasion. Who would he be?
He'd be the Mick Jagger.
He's the Ringo Starr of podcast.
No.
Yeah, no, I can live with that. I don't mind being Ringo.
Oh. Everybody likes Ringo.
Yeah, peace and love. Peace
Ringo
and love.
Star is the reason I exist. Literally, it was the song I was conceived to.
Ew. Wait a minute. Now we got to figure out the song. Was it a Beatles song or one of his solo songs?
It was one of his solo songs. Something about every time I see your face. And my
Reminds
mom decided
me of the
to
place
share.
I used to go. It's called Photograph.
Photograph. Thank you. Yeah, I was conceived to the song Photograph.
Not that horrible Nickelback song either.
Why does Chad Kroeger always sound constipated?
Look at this photograph!
Anyway, children of time.
A revelation.
We are your descendants.
A declaration.
I love you, Norris.
An accident brings the crew face to face with their own future.
We'll be thrown back in time 200 years.
Now, to save it.
If you don't take the Defiant back in time, the 8,000 people on this planet will cease to exist.
One of them must die.
Who are you to decide who lives or dies?
Can they outrun destiny on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Children of Time, you know, just to before we get to Children of Time, we have no Star Trek news, everybody.
I think they've gathered.
And, Star Trek news.
And we are here today to cover Children of Time, Season 5, Episode 22, directed by Alan Croker. Yeah, he definitely sounds like a Klingon word. Story by Gary Holland and Ethan H. Cook. And we...
Come on, let's be adults here, would you?
Yeah, come on, a little maturity out of you boys.
Why start now?
Guest appearances by Gary Frank, Jennifer Parsons, Davida Williams, and Doran Fine.
Presumably not the Gary Frank who's currently drawing the Doomsday Clock for DC Comics.
Nope, I already
Yeah, I couldn't come up. I couldn't come up with a joke for that, so I just let it go.
Yeah, I looked. Let it go. Oh, I'm sorry. I looked up Gary Frank, and he was on the TV show Family back in the 70s.
Nope.
But I wasn't really familiar with him otherwise.
Well, he basically makes himself look like Christopher Reeve in every role, but.
So anyway, Children of Time. The starship Defiant passes through a type of quantum bubble in order to investigate a planet within it. They find the planet is inhabited by 8,000 descendants of the Defiant's crew. The descendants' history began when the Defiant tried to escape from the bubble. Instead of passing through its energy barrier, the ship was thrown back in time 200 years and crashed with no hope of contacting the Federation or repairing the ship. Faced with that reality, the small stranded crew of the Defiant, including Dax, Sisko, O'Brien, Dr. Bashir, etc., decided to...
Not you, Kira.
You notice, yeah, her name is just left off that list. Aw. They decided to remain and establish a society. Unfortunately, the stranded Major Kira died a few weeks after the crash due to neural damage she incurred on the bridge when the ship was passing through the energy barrier while approaching the planet. Bashir did not have the required medical equipment on the Defiant to treat her. In addition to their descendants, two members of the original crew of the Defiant still exist on the colony. The changeling physiology of Odo has given him greater longevity than the rest. Excuse me, typo. While the Trill symbiote Dax continues to live on in a new host, Yedrin Dax, descendant of Worf and Jadzia Dax. The original Odo is inadvertently trapped in his gelatinous form due to convenient script writing. during which time the older Odo confesses that he has been in love with Kira since very early in their friendship. The crew is forced to choose between repairing the Defiant and escaping the situation, thereby canceling the very existence of the descendants, or repeat the crash of the Defiant to let things evolve as they had been presented to them. After much discussion, they chose the latter. Unbeknownst to them, the older Odo, wishing to prevent Kira from dying, changed their flight plan. Instead of flying into the spot in the atmosphere that will cause them to be flung back in time, they escape from the bubble, causing the colony with all of their descendants to vanish from existence. So it's kind of like an episode of Justice Society with...
Perdegaton.
With Perdegaton. Because it all just doesn't exist anymore. You just watched us for an hour and, yeah, oh no, we're gone. I like this episode in concept much more than I liked it in execution. And I'm having a tough time putting my finger on exactly why. But I'll tell you, you know, we had some delays in recording this episode. So I watched it quite some time ago, and then I watched it again, and then I watched it again because we've had delays. And every time, I find myself falling asleep. Every single time.
It's because you're old, Paul.
Maybe it's because I'm old, but there are other episodes I'm able to stay up through. So I'm not necessarily seeing the total correlation there. Like I said, conceptually, I think it's great. It makes you think. And, you know, it presents science fiction issues. It presents moral dilemmas. There's a lot of meat there. And yet when I watch it, it doesn't have me sitting at the edge of my seat enjoying it.
Are you falling asleep during the planting scene, maybe?
There's a planting scene?
Well, admittedly, okay. I was reading in the companion, this didn't come out quite the way they wanted it to. They were going to have this moment that was going to be movie-esque where everybody was harvesting rather than planting. Unfortunately,
harvesting
there's nothing
organs.
harvesting plants, but there's nothing that is really harvestable in California in that way.
Does the companion actually say what they were planting? Because I'm like, are those weeds? Are those really
they were planting weeds. Get out of my weed garden.
It was a lot of dried flowers is what they were working with.
Oh, okay.
See, I felt, yes, it was a slower episode. It was a think piece. I was never bored by it, though.
No, I wasn't bored either. I thought that not only did the 200 plus, you know, did the old Odo pull a dick move, but regular Odo pulled a dick move by putting everything on Kira. Oh, yeah, by the way, yeah, he did this for you. What?
Yeah.
You couldn't have just kept that one to yourself,
really.
That was the only negative note I've got about this one. I'm going to shoot my load straight off the bat. Sorry. I love this one. This is a 5-star episode. It's got a brilliant science fiction premise. I loved all the character moments in it. I love all the ideas behind it as well. I love that it doesn't have an easy answer to the dilemma. I love the ending where Sisko and Dax are both, oh, well, it must have been Yedrin who did it, and off they walk all confident in their Starfleet hubris, and then it turns out that that's not the case at all. The only problem I have with this one is the ending. The writers should have found a way for Odo to reveal to the audience that old Odo had done it, and not dump all that on poor Kira.
Yeah, because
the rest
already,
of it, I love.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, Andy. Everything that you said, I agree with. But it kept putting me to sleep just the same.
Well, see, it seems like the execution of the episode didn't work for you. Whereas for me, I loved all the character drama of it. And I loved the bit, like two-thirds of the way through, where all the senior officers are sat on Defiant and Sisko's letting everyone have their say as to what they think they should do. And I just love that whole moral dilemma. I love O'Brien's, you are not telling me I cannot go back to my family. I'm going back. Well, what about these 800 people? What about them? They won't exist. They will never have existed. And then you've got the other people arguing, but they do exist. They're here. And what I love about it is it doesn't have an easy way out. I don't have a problem with old Odo doing it, because that it does have a little bit more emotional resonance for us than if Yedrin Dax had done it. But at the same time, I like that any other Star Trek show would have found a way, that convenient way that Yedrin had of, well, there will be two Defiants and one will come back in time. In any other of the Star Trek shows, that's how this would have ended. And
yeah, I didn't want this to be Thomas Riker.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine had the balls to not do that. And what I really like about it is, because this is Deep Space Nine, you know this is going to live with them. That even though they didn't make that decision, even though it was Odo who did it, they've still got on their conscience that these 800 people will now never exist. But you've also, I always felt there should have been like a subplot follow-up to this in another episode. Like how uncomfortable this made the rest of the crew. Because suddenly O'Brien, poor O'Brien, knows that at some point in the future he moved on from Keiko's and got together with whichever ensign that he got together with. But those two have got to carry on working together, both knowing that in this alternate future they ended up together. Now, Bashir's fine. He can go and hit on whoever he ended up with because he's single. But poor O'Brien has got yet another emotional weight to bear for the rest of the series. And the poor guy...
So what you're saying is, you're saying it was silently a torture O'Brien episode.
Yeah, silently it is. Yeah, the poor guy has now got this knowledge of this whole other life that he's lived that he can't tell Keiko about this. She'll smack him about.
So, and so and so. It was another reality, I swear. It wasn't me. Wait, it was me, but it wasn't me.
My only other issue with this one is a production one. When they're doing the planting seed, which I love that planting scene, simply because it's the moment where O'Brien realizes we can't let these people die.
Yeah.
And I love it from that character point of view, because O'Brien's us. O'Brien's the normal guy. Mm-hmm. The only problem I had with it is in production, it was incredibly windy that day, which you can see, but it doesn't seem like they went back and re-looped the dialogue. So the dialogue's really low in that scene, or it was on the Netflix version. I don't know if the DVDs have enhanced the sound or whatever. But other than that, I really enjoyed this one. I'm giving this 5 stars.
I like when the Klingons come up over the hill.
Yes.
And Worf is like,
and I love
the enemy
love
to
Worf's
fight.
The enemy is their enemy.
Yeah. I love Worf. And the line of the episode, is it true you can kill people by stirring them? Only when I am angry.
Yeah, that is no question the line of the episode. I can't compete with that one.
Oh, I think Dax is, what if it's smart fungus? That's brilliant as well.
No, I agree with you, Andy. I mean, when I say in some episodes when I give it a lower review that Deep Space Nine is competing with itself, this is one of the episodes I would say it's competing with. Because they didn't go with a BS, that's a we're all better people ending. They went the opposite direction. This landed, and it landed hard.
Mm.
And, I mean, I was haunted by this episode. So I was looking forward to going back and rewatching it. It was the exact same experience both times.
Yeah.
There may have been something in my eye, but it might have been the wind with the dirt was blowing in it. Maybe that was, you know.
Well, the idea of seeing your own legacy, I know we had a reverse of that in Back to the Future, but seeing your own legacy, this is the future you could have. That's like emotionally potent as an idea. And then to put the idea that, well, if you don't do the sequence of events, that's all gone. Everything that's been built here is gone.
That's what carries this one through for me. It's that emotional dilemma. Mm-hmm. That yes, you can argue that O'Brien's right, and I'm 100% on the guy's side. I'm sorry, I would move hell and high water to get back home to my family. Mm-hmm. But there's that other little side of it. It's like there's 800 people here. They're not dead at the minute. They exist now.
8,000.
And it's not that it's 8,000 people that you don't care about. Humanity as a race, we care about the people we care about, and everyone else is always just, oh, that's a shame. Whereas this is 8,000 people that are descended from you. This is your great-great-great-grandson or whatever. That's more emotionally potent than, say, A Taste of Armageddon, where they wipe out people that you never know. In this instance, you're killing your grandchildren.
Oh, well.
Whoa. Yeah, now on Voyager, it probably would have been. Oh, well, never mind.
Well, this episode
on Deep
kind
Space
of...
Nine, it's not.
This episode kind of basically destabilizes the whole concept of Voyager, because most people who get ported to the Delta Quadrant with such a slim, minimal, next-to-nothing hope of getting home, and certain amount of supplies, like, why don't we just plant ourselves here?
Supplies...
We apparently have an unlimited number of shuttlecraft, so we definitely have transportation.
Yeah, whereas in this, they didn't have that, did they? They basically cannibalized the shuttlecraft to give them the basics they needed to kick off their life. I mean, I suppose you can argue that Dax is smart enough to get a signal out, because 200 years ago would have been what? It would have been the nascent Federation.
Mm-hmm. And they would have overlooked this, because there's no... If it's not an active... If Defiant's not active, they're not going to see that. Basically, they come under prime directive, so...
Well, it's also in the Delta Quadrant, so...
That's right.
Was it in the Delta Quadrant?
Yeah, because it was the whole wormhole issue.
Yeah, they went through the wormhole.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, you're right. So that signal wouldn't have made any difference, though. Okay. I did love that they got Quark's contractually obligated appearance in by having him be the teacher.
That was great. I loved that. Like I said, there were elements of this episode, pretty much every element about it I liked. Just when you put it all together, for whatever reason, I could not focus on it more than it in bites. Mm. And I don't know why. I don't know what about it let me just kind of like let my mind wander away from it and let me doze off repeatedly.
Mm.
And that's my criticism of it. I can't put my finger on exactly what I didn't like. Was as a science fiction concept, I think it's great. The moral dilemmas of it, I think that's great. I really enjoyed old Odo. I just thought it was cool to have his, you know, him come out and be different.
Why doesn't he have any contact with the rest of the colony?
I don't think it's that he doesn't. I just think he didn't in this episode.
He has no... Yeah, I don't think he...
Uh-huh. There was a deleted scene. I mean, it's not been reproduced. It was in the script where he explains that he was tired of watching people die. So he spent like a century as a tree, then he decided to be a cloud. And I was very thankful that they removed that bit of dialogue, but I get the idea that he would go out and experience different aspects of a planet.
He does look kind of hippy-dippy.
And you know what, as far as the... younger Odo spilling the beans to Kira, I'm okay with that as a social faux pas, because... Mm. You know, our timeline Odo has repeatedly shown himself to be socially inept. So he may not realize the burden he's putting on her. He may just think he's furthering his own agenda of letting her know how much he loves her.
Well, he's unburdening his soul onto her, though.
Yeah, but I don't think the current time Odo, I don't think he has enough social awareness to realize that he's burdening her. I think he just kind of, you know, he doesn't know how to deal with his emotions. That's been shown repeatedly. Our timeline Odo is social relationship high school level. And a high school kid might not have the awareness to know, boy, by telling her this, I'm going to be torturing her for the rest of her life.
I would normally agree with that, except that we've seen developments in Odo recently. Simple investigation, he developed another level of maturity.
Not as far as his amore goes.
Really? Because he's that one of the things, one of the reasons this episode was written was they wanted to further the Odo Kira thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized the placement of this episode was intentional for two reasons. One, because this is a script idea that had been floated around since season two, I believe. But one was they received a script idea that was exactly like the one that had been pitched years ago. Two, well, now we've had a simple investigation. Odo has learned, hey, I can be a man. I can be in a relationship and express my feelings better.
Yeah, but he never learned that there's feelings he should keep to himself.
Well, yeah, so instead he just comes off like Fred Durst, from Limp Bizkit. He did it all for the nookie. The nookie. Oh, sorry.
Well, well the Star Trek guys liked it so much, Enterprise remade this.
Oh, yeah. Was it E squared?
Yeah, something. I think it was a late second or third season episode, I think.
I thought it was during the Zindi one, because after the Zindi... Wasn't that what kicked it off?
That would have been the third season.
That's the third season.
Oh, okay. It's been a while since I watched Enterprise.
I think that the dialogue delivery in that scene was a little bit awkward. I get that Odo is... He's realizing that Oldo has revealed his secret, and he's going to have to... He's going to have to fess up now, so he can't just avoid Kira.
Why? Why? He kept the secret about killing those three guys, letting those three guys die that he didn't need to let die. Bottle it up, dude.
How did that work
out
for
him? Be like the rest of us.
How did that work out for him?
Well, it should have been asked later. So now he's just an open book. He'll make a great security chief.
No, because now, I mean, he's been exposed.
I've been investigating you, and I have evidence. If only I can corroborate it. You wait here. Just everything, every thought he has, he just expresses now.
Odo, we're going to have to let you go because you can't catch anybody, and crime is running rampant on the stadium. On the station. Aw, sorry. I'm going to go be a tree.
Now I'm free to go romance Kira.
It's all part of my master plan.
I didn't know that neither Rene Auberjonois or Nana Visitor were really interested in pursuing that romantic storyline until I was looking through the companion on this episode.
Yeah, neither of them are particular fans of Odo and Kira getting together, and I can see the point, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think as an actor in an ongoing thing, you don't ever want your character to be totally happy because that's not fun to act.
Well, for them, for what she was saying, Nana Visitor, that she liked the idea of a very deep friendship without it becoming romantic, which... If you look at something like The X-Files, where that relationship was always platonic up and deep, but platonic up until a point. Until it wasn't, and you see where that took us. I tend to agree with her that idea of romance can taint that friendship idea.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that would have been nicer to have them just remain good friends, especially after this.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is something that Kira would have been like, I know I can't live with that. I can't let you kill that many people for me.
But he didn't.
No, he didn't. That's the point. But it's within him to do that.
It's not just that. No, yeah. It's literally within him because he merged with Oldo. Oldo's memories are in there.
Mm. They did, yeah. They did link.
So that is... Now, Odo's got to live with that.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to bother him that much.
Not really, no.
By the way,
those 8,000 people, they're on your head. Goodbye. I'm going to go rest now. I'm going to go turn into a pebble now for a while.
Yeah, and it's also something that's not mentioned a lot. They aren't just condemning the 8,000 people who are currently alive to never existing. They're condemning the descendants of those 8,000 people. They're condemning the entire lifespan of that colony.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot more than just the people that are currently living.
It could have ended up like the Gold Key comic where in the first issue, the Enterprise commits absolute genocide on a planet because it's full of plant people. They're like, well, it's too dangerous. Spock says we got to destroy it, so they destroy it. They literally scorched Earth it. This is something where they did have to deal with what the ramifications of their decision is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're Starfleet, so I mean that's something they have to they have to live to a certain ideal. And I think the crew was willing to do that. That showed what Starfleet is about. That life in all its myriad forms is worth preserving. Conserving would also work, too. And they were willing to do that till Odo changed their plans for him.
They do make it seem as if O'Brien is the only one who has any ties to the station that needs to get back.
Yeah.
Which is, that's just a little ridiculous. You know, I mean, they all have, you know, not everybody does, but people have relationships.
Well, mm-hmm. Sisko has.
And yeah. And Sisko also has what's her name?
Cassidy. But we're not just by the definition of the story, we only see the senior command crew for most of it. And Jadzia and Worf are both looking that they're both there.
Odo and
Kira. There's only Sisko and O'Brien who are leaving something behind. But
Sisko doesn't even act like he's leaving anything behind.
He doesn't seem to really give that a thought, does he? But what about the other 40-odd members of the crew?
No, they don't count. They're not. They're only receiving extra pay.
Yeah.
So they don't count.
Do they all just go, oh, all right, well, the captain's made this decision. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, these are decisions that go beyond military.
Mm-hmm. They go beyond the command structure, definitely.
Yeah, so, you know, I can't imagine that everybody on the crew is just willing to say, well, if the captain said it, that's what we're doing. Because there's got to be people in that 40-odd people who have husbands and wives and children that aren't there.
Hmm.
And O'Brien can't be the only one who says, hey, oh, whoa, I got kids and a wife.
Yeah.
He can't be the only one doing that. So, you know, now I don't know how you factor all of that in.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Know, and have a streamlined script that you're going to do in 45 minutes. So I'm not really saying it as a criticism of the episode. I'm just saying it from the, hey, we, you know, as long as we're breaking this down and looking at the intricacies of it, then that's something that should be, you know, we should be thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and you just, I think you nailed it on the head that in a 45-minute episode, you don't get that, you know, that input. So make O'Brien the mouthpiece of that particular mindset.
Yeah, essentially that's what the scene is with the command crew having the discussion. You can assume that that's a discussion that has gone on a wider scale. But for the purposes of the episode and the budget and the time scale, we're just having all of the different opinions put forward by the main characters, which is fine.
I'm thinking there's people in the crew who say, if they say we're staying here, we're committing mutiny, man, because I'm going home. And then there's other ones saying, I'm not going back to that shrew. I'm happy here.
there's always the possibility as well that some of them, they may have been told that, look, if we go back, we're going to die. At least if we crash land here, we live.
I want to live.
Yeah. So
I also think, though, when you sign up for something like Starfleet, and Bill may back me up with his military experience, you kind of know that there are certain inherent risks to what you do. And that
But this one goes beyond risk. This becomes choice.
It does. However, if you meet a different civilization and you're stuck there, you know, let's say you land on the planet from the apple. You can't
get Houston.
Yeah, thank you. You can't get back to the ship or anything. There's a possibility you're going to have to settle yourself. That is probably part of Starfleet Academy training.
Yeah, but even Starfleet can't account for everything. I mean, as Captain Janeway once said, weird is part of the job.
Yeah. Risk. Risk is our business.
Look at Andy, just tied into Voyager now. It's like Mr. Voyager.
Oh, look, because I've watched it recently.
Maybe you should be doing a Voyager series with Luke, Jack, and Eddie.
Gentlemen, it's why we're aboard her.
But I think, again, you only have 45 minutes to present this, so I do think they do a pretty good job of giving us that moral dilemma and still having a chance to kind of show us where the crew has gone and what's become of them. And like Bill, one of my favorite moments in the episode was they said, oh, here come the Klingons. And, you know, Klingons, where?
They're just regular people.
They're regular people who just have messier clothes.
Yeah.
Well, there is only one Worf, so presumably dilution of the gene pool.
Yeah, over the 200 years.
It does beg the question as well. Did Sisko at some point say, look, like Commander Adama did in Battlestar Galactica, we're going to have babies, so you're all going to have more than one partner.
Well, yeah, I've
Doesn't it just assume there's more women than men then?
Well, yeah, we never do find out what the makeup of the crew is, the 48, 47 people that are on the crew. It could be that there are more women on the crew than men.
That's the only way you'd have to have more than one partner for baby-making purposes.
Mm-hmm. Could be a sausage party.
Do we not see all the other 3,000 people in the colony that are a little off, maybe, because they have a shallow gene pool here? Because while you guys have been talking, I was thinking about the science of this. I'm like, is 42, 48 people a deep enough gene pool? Apparently, maybe not, because it's saying there's like a 5,500 rule saying that you need about 50 people to combat inbreeding and a minimum of 500 individuals is needed to reduce genetic drift, which is So I was like, huh, yeah, maybe.
Well, you factor into the fact that also that we're not all of the crew is human.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, and factor in that Kira dies. Odo presumably doesn't have children, so those two down.
Mm.
So the science doesn't really work.
Yeah, but we're not really thinking about the science in this one. This is essentially a Bran and Braga mind screw of an episode, but followed through to a far more logical conclusion than Braga's mind-bending episodes normally were. The end of his mind f***s, he normally... Sorry, you're going to have to bleep that now, aren't you? He normally pressed the reset button, whether it was a Next Generation episode or a Voyager episode or an Enterprise episode. Whenever he did a story like this, the reset button would be pressed at the end and everything would go back to normal.
Well,
and
effectively does.
It kind of, but at least the characters remember it.
Mm-hmm.
So the characters the characters are carrying forward what happened here. And like we said, that's probably going to have more ramifications for Odo, Kira, and O'Brien than anybody else. But even everybody else, they're always going to have at the back of their mind that these thousands of people died. But the only problem I have with this then as well is that the dilemma was taken out of our people's hands. To kind of leave them with clean hands at the end of it. Because at the end of the episode, Dax and Sisko think that this was Yedrin Dax who did this, which was originally how the script was going to end. And it was Irish Stephen Burr who stepped in and said, no, if that happens, there's no emotional ramifications for it, and it's just a reset button. And that's why he made it Aldo who did it.
So I think it definitely has more... resonance with Aldo doing it.
Yeah, and it definitely gives you that ending. I'm still a little on the fence as whether he should have told Kira. I mean, I do buy your no prize explanation that, you know, Odo isn't perhaps well versed in emotional etiquette and how to handle situations like this. But at the same time, I don't know that that's an inordinate amount to dump on poor Kira's shoulders.
Yeah, those 8,000 people that don't exist, they're all on your head. Good night.
But, you know, other than that, I genuinely love this one. I think it's one of the finest science fiction conceits Deep Space Nine ever did. And I love that, typical of Deep Space Nine, they don't back down on the moral and ethical implications of it.
And I'm saying Tom Petty.
Yeah, that's exactly what was going through my mind.
Whoa, back down.
That sounded just like him.
I know.
It did. It's like Tom Petty joined us on this show.
The ghost of Tom Petty.
Perhaps another science fiction episode we can get. But should we rate it or should we hear what Blaine says?
Let's see what Blaine says.
Okay.
Okay.
What did Blaine say? He said something now. So we're going to read what he said because I can't go on and I won't back down.
And Blaine won't back down. So Blaine says, hi, guys. Well, Odo has confessed his love for Kira, sort of. Future Odo's attempt to bring them closer drives them apart a bit due to the cost involved, but it's a good character exploration. I also love Worf's line about killing people with a look if he's angry. I particularly enjoy that O'Brien will not give up easily on the family he left on the station. It's a great facet to the character and a welcome one. They seem to have gotten the hang of positioning characters without making it obvious that they're doing so. The tension is still building. Blaine. Yeah, so, I kind of agree with everything he's saying there. And, That's pretty much it. I think he kind of hits on the points that we did, and we kind of agree. The one thing O'Brien has is that they make it clear he was the last one to give up on getting back to his family. So I think that's got to give you a little bit of moral comfort to know, yes, eventually I did move on, but I waited until I was absolutely certain I couldn't get back. And I think if you think about it, it's almost a situation where, like, he's a widower.
Yeah.
And in that situation, I think most of us wouldn't want our significant other to be just sitting there mourning the loss of us for the rest of their lives. We'd want them to move on and be happy, you know, at least in theory. In reality, we'd want them to sit there looking at our picture for the rest of their lives and crying. But, you know, in theory, we'd like them to move on and be happy. So I don't think realistically that Keiko should be blaming Miles for moving on if she hears what happened, because he did hold out until he was absolutely certain they couldn't get back. The only thing about it that makes it problematic, I think, relationship-wise, is that she knows who he moved on with.
That's why he's better not mentioning it.
Yeah, so, you know, yes, I did the right thing morally. I waited. I mourned. I didn't just run off and have an affair. But, oh, you see that chick over there? That's, yeah, you know?
Yeah, that's who I ended up with. Yeah,
in the other existence, I was tapping that.
So, no, the best thing he can do is just not mention it. So poor O'Brien has more emotional baggage to carry around with him.
No, but how do you not mention it? Because she's going to hear about the adventure they had and that there were these 8,000 people. So you stayed celibate for the rest of your life? No.
No, Commander Sisko ordered us not to.
I only did it because I had to, and she was ugly.
And I who was it? It was on the Defiant with you. Who was it then? Hey. And then he laughed to tell her, won't he?
Then he just blurts out, "It was Julian." She's like, "I know it."
Yeah, because Julian just turns into a bloody horn dog when he finds out who he's tapped up with, doesn't he? Bloody hell, Jules, put it back in your pants, mate.
Yeah, he's like going back in the past on the Enterprise. He's in an alternate universe. Oh yeah. All right, yeah. I gotta spread these augmented genes, baby. Yeah. Do I make you horny? Yeah.
In fact, with his augmented genes, he can make the argument that he should be the one who's perpetuating the species.
I should be leading this colony.
My genes are better than yours. Why should you get to plant your seed?
I mate with all the women, including Worf. What?
Oh, did I say that out loud?
I like his Klingon ridges.
And he kills people when he's very angry.
Children.
are they the lines of the episode?
That is the line of the episode. I can't go with anything else. So I guess we should rate it now.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I was probably the lowest on this one, but I don't know if my rating is necessarily going to reflect that. Discussing it I appreciated from the start the science fiction concept of it, and the moral dilemmas and everything about it. There was nothing about it that particularly stood out as me saying, oh, this was bad. I think the biggest thing we've hit on that to complain about was the fact that Odo revealed what happened, but I don't really even have a problem with that. My biggest problem is somehow in the execution, it just moved a little too slowly, I guess. Pacing-wise, maybe it needed to pick up just slightly for me, but from a science fiction point of view, I thought it was really solid. From a moral dilemma point of view, really solid. From a let's see what the descendants are, I thought it was kind of cool and interesting. So I'm going to give it a 4.0. I can't give it a 5 because it did put me to sleep. but I'm not going to take huge points away from it for that.
I didn't fall asleep, and I've watched this a few times, and each time I got a little, the dirt being blown around in the wind made my eyes water, even though it's I was watching the TV, so that's kind of hard to do. So not saying I was crying, but even with Odo being kind of a douche, Odo being a douche, and Andy kind of talked me up, so I'm going to give it a 5. I'm going to go with Andy.
No, I'm going to be I could be your friend, right, Andy? Andy?
5 Quark math teachers. Maybe if I was taught math by Quark, I'd understand it so much better.
Possibly. I've already said I think this is 5. I think it's a great science fiction conceit. I love the way they don't dance around the moral dilemma. They actually tackle it head on. I thought there's some wonderful character moments in it. I love it.
I'm going to agree with Andy and Bill and give it a 5 for the same reasons.
Doctor,
come on, Paul.
I'm not giving it a 5.
I need my 5. Only, I want my 5.
The nice trivia note about this is the first episode that aired as Armin Shimerman also started appearing on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So he was doing both jobs at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize they'd overlapped.
Yeah.
What do we do now?
So Armin Shimerman was coining it in, wasn't he? All that gold press.
You know, I've got some trivia about him. I don't know if I brought this up. If I have brought this up before, I apologize. So I went to a Star Trek convention. It was about the time that Generations was out, and Armin Shimerman was one of the guests, and he was signing autographs for free which is funny considering he plays a Ferengi. He was just so happy, and there was such a long line, and people were getting him to sign everything, and there was like some people were like, "Oh, I can't believe he's doing that for free. You know, he's not going to make any money." But I think he was just so happy to talk to everyone in the crowd that he was just signing away. You know, great guy.
What a nice man.
Mm-hmm.
Nice man cometh.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, I just thought it was funny that, you know, his obviously the character he plays was so you know, commerce related, and at the same show I had to pay $10 to get Marina Sirtis to sign something for me.
Well, as I've just pointed out, Armin Shimerman had two jobs, so yeah. He was doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
No, he actually did. I saw a clip. He went on Regis and Kathy Lee back in, when the show was on, of course. Started out, he came out as Quark, and then went backstage and came out later as himself, and he was seemed genuinely happy to have the fandom behind him, which not every Star Trek alum feels that way.
Yeah, well, one of the things about, again, let's bring it back to Voyager, because I've just released a Voyager episode on the Palace of Glittering Lights, my other show. Go and listen to that. But I don't have any time.
January. We're now in June.
We're going to call you.
Oh, shut up.
We're going to call you Andy Shimmerman.
Yes. Neelix is a waste of space character, but Ethan Phillips is thoroughly delightful and delighted to have had a steady gig for 7 years.
Well, it's the Benson factor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Between him and Odo.
I understand the reference, Paul.
Okay, I was just being clear, just in case people don't. People might not even know who Benson is.
I don't know what Benson is.
Oh, Robert Guillaume. He was the lieutenant governor.
Okay.
He was and Ethan Phillips and Robert Guillaume were both on the show.
Rene
Aubergeois. What did I say? Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of Benson.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Rene Aubergeois played Clayton, who was this obnoxious, uppity, I don't remember what his job was, but he was basically a foil for Benson.
He was like the chief of staff?
Something like that.
I want to say.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Next time on an all-new episode, listen to the prophets. Michael Editon's going out in a blaze of glory. Sadly, he does not bring John Bon Jovi with him.
Oh, Editon's in a blaze of glory, taking down the Jim Hadar.
Spoiler. All I could say is thank you for not bringing John Bon Jovi with you.
Hey, hey, hey.
I am not a fan.
And I think for next episode, Bill should have completely written a parody of that song, but with Deep Space Nine lyrics. Go to it, Bill. You've got a week.
You got 2 weeks.
Yeah, a week. But in compressed time, it's only about 10 minutes.
don't You're ruining the magic. Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't let everybody down, Bill.
Wait, I'll go to Quantum Bubble and reproduce.
What? The...
here come the Robinsons. I understand you can kill people just by burping.
You ever see a cat fart, Bill?
No, but I've just smelt one. Thanks, cat.
Did you watch it happen?
No, I did not.
Well, bye, everybody, on that note.
Bill makes it sound like the Eye of Agamotto.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
I've come to bargain, Alvin.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, sorry, I was having a dream. I was Betty Davis's hairdresser, and yeah.
I don't even want to know.
There was also horses performing taxidermy on other horses.
What?
Okay.
Yeah, I know. But don't ask. I don't know. It was weird to watch a horse put a skeleton together with no hands, using only its mouth on another horse.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't say.
I would think that would be perfectly normal.
It is in my dream world.
I kept waking up, and I was in that. I'm still asleep, but I'm awake, but I'm still dreaming that vague state. And I kept waking up thinking these people were in my bedroom redecorating.
Turns out they were.
Maybe it was horses.
Could have been
Betty Davis.
Maybe had Betty Davis eyes.
Oh, no, yeah. I had Betty Davis eyes. Wilbur.
I'm just picturing you being Betty Davis's hairdresser and singing that to her, and her being like, "No shit, I never heard that song before."